Our next guest on Downtown is a legendary broadcaster. He's been honored by several halls of fame, including the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland. He's a pilot. He's a podcast host. He's an author. He's a poet, a commercial spokesman, and has a wonderful book entitled Staying Happy, Healthy, and Hot. We're the brand new Louie generation. Dick Summer, it is a treat for us to have you with us on Downtown.
Well, I'm delighted, too. Rich, do you remember Louie?
Oh, I am certainly, if not a charter member, then an associate member of the Louie generation, yes.
You know, it's funny. I used to do record hops. I guess a lot of guys on the air used to do record hops. And any time the kids would stop dancing, I'd just whip out Louie. And that put the energy back into the group. And so I thought, you know, I'd name my little experiment Louie generation.
Well, the book is an absolute wonderful read, but before we talk about that, I have to see if what I'm imagining, radio being theater of the mind, is what's actually happening. I'm picturing you in that big, comfortable black leather papa chair.
That's terrific. Actually, I believe in radio of the heart, theater of the heart. There is an abundance of theater of the mind going around. But theater of the heart is another step. And I've been very fortunate in my life to have worked at radio stations where people are allowed to be people, you know? And that's, I miss that on radio right now. So, yeah, and the book is designed to kind of encourage that. Staying happy, healthy, and hot is for fun. I mean, there are a couple of serious points, and I really intend on making those points, but mostly it's fun. And I want to stop folks like me who don't look like the people in the TV beer commercials anymore with their fancy abs and perky breasts, you know. You don't want to let ourselves turn into slabs of lukewarm meat. The editor of the book wanted me to take that statement out, but I kept it in because I really mean it.
Well, now, I read in the book, though, Dick, that you still have the body of a 25-year-old.
Oh, yeah, but it's not mine. I'm from Brooklyn, see, so we have our scurrilous ways. A Brooklyn cat gets thirsty for milk, and he sneaks across the George Washington Bridge and hijacks a cow. You know, we don't mess around. You guys with your black flies up there, you think that's tough. But, we invented tough.
One of the things that I always enjoyed about you on the radio from, as I told you in an email, from back in the 60s when I would tune in on my transistor at night to WBZ in Boston, is that I've always thought of radio as a very intimate medium. And for my money, nobody was better at that. Nobody was better at making the listener feel like you were talking directly to them.
That is very high praise coming from a radio professional. Thank you very much, Rich. It started with, well, I get 5 or 6 years old, something like that, when my folks gave me a transistor radio for Christmas. Now, you know, I'm from Brooklyn, so I turned the radio on, and it was on WNEW in New York. It just happened to be. And that was Christmas time. I don't think I turned that radio off until a little after Easter. The guys on that station did exactly what you're just talking about. They were big stars. They were making a lot of money, but they were talking to me, a skinny little big-eared kid in Brooklyn who hoped to grow up to find out if Jeannie Campbell, who used to live next door, turned out as pretty as I thought she might, and by the way, she did. And one of the thrills of my life is I got to work at that station. Now, you're a radio professional, so you understand what I'm talking about. WNEW was probably the last bastion. I don't mean to use bad language, but the last bastion of theater of the heart. One of the things that taught me the most about broadcasting, and you may appreciate this too because you do this. Willie B., William B. Williams, was one of the DJs on WNEW. And William B. Williams, he called himself Willie B., he was heavily involved with a group called Big Brothers. You know about Big Brothers?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And Vic Damone was a very popular singer at the time, and he was also involved with Big Brothers. And both of them were really into it. So Willie had Vic on his show one time to promote a concert that Vic was giving as a benefit for Big Brothers. And Willie was emceeing it. So, you know, he had him on for an interview. It was a good interview. And at the end, Willie B. took about 10 seconds of dead air. Now, you're a professional radio person. You know what 10 seconds of dead air sounds like?
Death.
My God, the bells start ringing. Program directors run around screaming and pulling their hair out, and yours too, for the matter. And then Willie just said, Vic, I really like you. that put me on the floor. Because it was just two guys who really cared about Big Brothers and about each other. And that's what I call theater of the heart. So I don't know what the question was. Did I answer it?
You did, absolutely. You've been such a great storyteller through your entire career, and so many great stories in the book as well. But I was especially taken with the chapter on being a man and being manly. And can you explain the difference for anybody who might be unsure, the difference between being manly and being macho?
Yeah, I think macho is really the opposite of what I consider to be manly. And, you know, being manly now, there's colleges that are giving courses in overcoming your manhood, which I think is pretty stupid. You're a teacher, so you would understand what I'm talking about. To me, being manly... Well, my dad was the smartest guy who ever lived, and he gave me a lot of interesting ideas. One of the things that he always said was, a man's first job is to protect his woman. And he was a guy, he believed in show as opposed to tell. I remember one time coming home, I was a kid, 6, 7 years old, something like that. And I remember coming out of the house, and a delivery guy was giving my mom a hard time. And Dad came home and saw this. He didn't say a word. He just picked the guy up and threw him over the stoop. I'd call that manly. But the other part of it, and one of the things that sits in the back of my head all the time, my dad had a beautiful, deep baritone voice. And I was so little, and I must have been, I don't know if I was a year, maybe 2 years or whatever, but I distinctly remember we had been out in the car going someplace. We came home, it was late at night, or it seemed late at night, and I was half asleep, and Dad picked me up, and he carried me into the house, and while he was doing it, he was singing, and I can remember the feeling of that deep baritone voice in his chest. And put those two things together and add a spice of whatever it is you think it is to be yourself. And I don't think you need a college course in overcoming being a man. I mean, it's just really simple. And I think macho is the exact opposite of that. The guys I know who are macho, and I know a couple, the guys I know who are macho basically are afraid of other guys who might give them a hard time if they show any softness, anything other than cynicism and humor and stuff like that. And so I think being a man is just being comfortable with whoever the heck you are.
We're talking with Dick Summer here on Downtown. You also put together a wonderful podcast, and if anybody hasn't heard it, you need to check it out. Tell us how the Good Night podcast came to be and what an outlet that provides for you.
It is wonderful for me. There are about almost 600 of them now, and they're up at dicksummer.com/podcast. And thank you for the plug. I appreciate that. What happened was I have a son who has a degree in music, and he is also a programmer. And he suggested that I do a podcast because I was off the air. I've been off the air for quite a while now. I still do some TV commercials, but being on the air and radio is something that I always loved, and I miss it. So my son Dave said, "Why don't you do a podcast?" I said, "Huh?" And he explained what it is. And so I have a good mic here, and I plugged it into the computer, and I messed around a little bit, and I came out with what has become the Good Night Podcast. And I call it Good Night because I love being on the air at night. You know, you understand this, I'm sure, because you're a professional. When you're on the air during the day, like 4 to 6 p.m., you are competing with a zillion other things for a person's attention. When you're on the air at night, if somebody is listening to you, they're really listening to you. And I was fortunate to work at a couple of stations that had big signals. WBZ in Boston covers 38 states at night. And WNEW and WNBC in New York have, you know, approximately the same kind of coverage. So I would sit there in the BZ studio on Storrow Drive or in the middle of an otherwise dark RCA building in New York, 62 stories. And it's just you and the tech on duty on the second floor and a couple of guys working TV up on the eighth floor. That's it. And you're talking to the country, and they're really listening because there isn't anything else to do at that time of night. You got silly stuff on TV that they're trying to sell you the egg beater and call immediately before you even bother to change your underwear, and we'll throw in whatever. So there is a contact that you can make late at night. And I did some CDs one of them is called Night Connections. And they're loosely based on phone calls that people made to me in the middle of the night. And it's astonishing. Have you ever done nighttime radio?
Only on a fill-in basis, but we were shaking our heads here in studio as you were talking about that. It's a completely different animal because it's so intimate, and the people who are listening are right there with you.
Oh, my God, yeah. And people would call and tell me stuff that they wouldn't tell their confessors. And I used to make notes on these, and I wrote little stories around them, and that's what's on the Night Connection CDs. So it was always a two-way street for me. And I'm sure I got more out of it than the people who were listening. And, I have a softball-playing, motorcycle-riding, all-night heller friend. I'll call him Steve because that's not really his name. But he stopped having fun. And it seems like overnight, he fell into a vat of anger, frustration, hurting feet. He could have become a political talk show host, telling his people to get together, gather rocks, and throw them at those bad guys. That's how you get old and wrinkly and crunchy, You fall into a vat of anger and frustration. And remember that TV show, the Thrill of Victory and the Agony of Defeat? You forget that the thing that started all of this was that you stopped having fun. I think fun is the lifeline back to living. It's not a fountain of youth. What is, folks my age don't look like the people in the TV beer commercials anymore with their solid abs and their perky breasts. But that doesn't mean we don't have to let ourselves do what Steve did either. Steve let himself turn into a chunk of lukewarm meat. And I think that happened at least partially because what he expected to happen. Steve is what I call in my book, a dreary drone. He complains about everything. He's angry most of the time. He watches way too much TV, and his belly has become a beer festival. I don't think he has laughed or had any fun in years. He says, that's what happens. No, that's what you let happen. You know, Big Louie is the head guy of the Louie generation. And he always says, you can't change what is, but you can change what you do about what is. And then he says, if you have any moving parts left, move them. I think that's great, great advice.
Hey, absolutely. Dick Summer with us here on Downtown. Now, will you be having a Shrewsbury for lunch today?
Congratulations. You do remember the story, the good Duke of Shrewsbury. For people who have just tuned in and are not aware of these alternate facts of history, the word sandwich is in honor of the Earl of Sandwich, who supposedly was the first guy to slap something succulent between a couple of slices of bread. But he wasn't. The first guy to do that was the good Duke of Shrewsbury. And so, when I was still on the air, I used to encourage people to go into restaurants and ask for a ham and Swiss Shrewsbury on rye, you know? And they did. So, a lot of the restaurants around the Boston area at that point had Shrewsburys on their menus. And I thought that was wonderful.
Dick, the book is absolutely filled with laughs and great advice. It's wonderful to listen to the podcast and to have the opportunity to talk with you. We wish you and the Lady Wonder Wench, of course, a very happy 2018.
And back at you, Rich. I appreciate your call very much. And do the best you can to stay warm. Rich, stay in touch, will you?
I will do that. Thank you so much.
I enjoyed this conversation a lot.
Thank you, Dick. We'll do it again. Appreciate it.